All right, welcome back, folks, to another edition of the Winter Podcast. It's On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Joining me again is Kieran Clark of GolfShake.com fame. How you doing, Kieran? How you doing this another wintry afternoon?
Well, it is a wintry afternoon, but believe it or not, I actually hit the range the other day, so that's a real feat. So actually, I think spring is on its way. So the signs are good. I was on the range hitting some shots with some mixed results, has to be said, but enough good shots to give me false optimism going into the new season.
Nice. False optimism. I like that.
Yeah, it's always false. That's what the game does, Anthony. It draws you in, it teases you with those kind of first. You think, oh, that was a good tee shot, there's a couple of good irons there. And then it just sucks you in and it punishes you throughout the summer. At least that's what happens to me.
Yeah, I think, because I think it all comes down to the simple thing. And I know I say simple because it is simple. But the bottom line is, and it's not really complicated. And yeah, People seem to make it a big, make it more than it is. But the bottom line is the beginning of the year, there's very little expectation.
Exactly.
And that's it. And as the year goes on, you expect to play better. And when you don't, you then rack your brain and go and basically, like you were in the military, chop yourself down to nothing and try to build yourself up again. And by the time you do that, the season's over again. So it's a vicious cycle we live in. It's a vicious world we live in the golf world.
When you put it like that, why do we bother playing this game? Because it's so infuriating when you put it like that. It's so true.
Because we love the process of golf, and I think that's just the bottom line. You know, it's funny you bring that up. I was thinking about this the other day, and this idea of selling golf as a lifestyle brand. And it seems like everybody's doing that, that golf is not just a sport, it's a brand, it's a way of life. And and to some degree it is, and I understand what they're saying. What they're saying is that this is a rich person's sport and you can live a life of leisure and play golf. And that's, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think that that's the kind of brand of life that you need to aspire to play golf. You can play golf just for the love of the game of golf. I just think that, in terms of if we just stay with the love of the game and the process of the game, like I love everything about the game that's connected to the game of golf, not necessarily the way of life. I like cleaning my clubs. I like setting a tee time. I like, talking golf. I like just being out on the golf course with a friend. That's when I say the process of golf and those aspects of golf, the camaraderie, although I tend to not play with a lot of people, but given my schedule, but the people that I do get a chance to play with are the people that I know that I'm going to have a good time with. So those are the things that I like about the game of golf. And it's all that, it's throwing grass up in the air and trying to judge the wind and trying to see how the ball's going to react on the green. That's the aspects of life. That's what I love. Whether, of course I'd like to play better, of course, but it's just going through that whole ritual. And so maybe I'm just in a long way just saying that we're all sort of just masochists as a whole.
Well, we are, but I think that's a good point, actually. And what I would say is I think golf itself is such an immersive game that you throw yourself into, you almost give yourself up to the game in so many ways. And it kind of, when you on the course and you all stuff around it. And in some ways, with life now the way it is, life seems almost to be quite artificial, almost surface now. And I think golf in its own way is a little bit beyond that. I think that's why it still has an appeal.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's the one thing that in this material world that we live in of, iPhones and instant gratification, it's the only, it's the closest thing we have to church that's not in church. And that it's a spiritual journey, and at least it is for me. I find it to be. I'm not sure that Joe Schmo drinking a six pack on the is in the Monday outing is thinking of it like that. But for me,
that's a different kind of journey.
exactly. Yeah, I'm not interested in that journey, to be honest with you. And to be honest with you, I rarely drink on the golf course, to be honest with you. It's not my thing. We haven't spoken in a week. How's everything going? What are you up to? What do you say?
Well, I must say, I'm still recovering from the trauma of last week's show when I embarrassed myself by referencing a certain Mr. Donald Trump as being my ideal celebrity golf partner. So I don't know what, I really have no excuse apart from the fact that the television was on in the background and I was talking to you on silent, and his stupid face appeared on the screen. And it was the first thing that came to my head. And I do absolutely, 100% regret it, Anthony. And I haven't actually slept since then. It's been that traumatic. So
I saw social media. It could be a cruel world, my friend. And some of those, some of those images are quite disturbing. So I can see why you couldn't sleep for a week.
Yeah, and the people know who they are. The people who are commenting on it and sending photos and pictures, they know who they are.
Exactly. So just so you know, although, you know, I'm going to say that just so you know, you're responsible for the demise of Kieran Clarke, but, yes. You know, that might have been their goal. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure.
Possibly. And it's terrible because it's going to bring me down. Not that I'm actually anywhere particularly high in anything, but these people, I thought they were my friends.
Well, I know Stuart Armstrong's your friend, so we can at least we know we have one. We have one one person who's not out to get you.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, I haven't been up to much here. It's been, you know, obviously cold. We went to I did take the kids on the lake, the nearby lake here to go some ice skating, and I created my own little embarrassment there where I forgot my hockey stick. I brought, the kids had gone with a friend earlier. I was working on a project, and then I rushed to meet them. And when I looked into the trunk of my car, my hockey stick was not in it. So I was the lonely dope out there skating without his hockey stick. And so that
Anthony, I think actually that's a sign, forgetting your hockey stick, that's a sign of advancing years, I'm afraid.
Yes.
Forgetting things now.
Yes, I rushed out the door. This is my... this is my equivalent of your Trump disclaimer that he was on in the background, but I was rushing around. I was rushing around and because I didn't want, I wanted to, you know, get down there. I wanted to play. Hockey's one of my all-time, is one of my pastime favorite things to do. I was mainly a football and lacrosse player, and I find that ice hockey is one of the ways, the only, you know, it took me 10 years to get the football player out of my golf swing, and the but ice hockey is one of the ways that I can still feed the beast a little bit and enjoy when I get a chance to do it.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, actually I don't play any other sports apart from golf, and even then that's actually debatable if I actually play golf or not. It's more of a form of golf that I try and play, but what I would, my only really other pastime recently has been following my beloved soccer team St. Johnston Football Club in the Scottish Premiership. And unfortunately, Anthony, they haven't won a match since December the 5th, and I'm getting awfully depressed about that.
Oh, jeez.
I know, it's been a long time.
You better take up a new hobby or something, my friend. Yes, I think I need to. You know, you can maybe you just have like a sort of buy into a sort of interesting team on the surface, even though you can still follow your real team in the background.
But you see, a lot of people do that, but I'm a real proper diehard supporter. I'm there all the games. It's a bit like golf. It's masochistic. You know, I go there and they get beat, you know, seemingly every week right now, and terrible. And I come away feeling awfully depressed. Actually, I watched a movie last week, The Grey, starring Liam Neeson, about these guys in Alaska who get chased by wolves. It's awfully grim. And at the game the other night, I came away from that feeling exactly the same way I felt at the end of The Grey, that movie, because it was grim indeed.
All right, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we turn ourselves to golf, and this way
that's
we cannot depress all of our listeners with
they'll
your...
They'll be turning off right now.
Yeah, they could be. I mean, if I was listening to your story right there. I'm not sure. I almost dropped the recording, actually. all right, so let's start with your side of the pond, and Charlie Schwartzel, Chucky Schwartzel. I don't think anybody calls him Chuck. I don't know if that's a South African thing, if you will. But Charlie Schwartzel wins again, I think, for like the fourth time in South Africa. I read an interesting thing on the EuropeanTour.com about this is the fifth South African to win this year already. So, you know, that's something interesting to start 2016. But our focus is on Charlie Schwartzel and Charles Schwartzel or Charles Schwartzel, if I am to be proper. you know, he just wins again in South Africa. Thoughts, comments, concerns?
Yeah, it's amazing because he seems seemingly only wins in South Africa. And actually, since he won the Masters 5 years ago now, he has only won in South Africa. And all these 11 European Tour-sanctioned events, only three of them have been outside of South Africa, twice in Spain and, of course, at Augusta. So for some reason, he dominates down there. Obviously, he was the best player in the field and he was a favourite to win it. And he certainly duly obliged by playing great on the weekend and deserved to win, won by 8 shots in the end, of course. And but with him, of course, it's a case of, you know, we all know how good technically a player he is and how capable he is. And but he's got to start showing it on the PGA Tour or even in the bigger European Tour events. He's actually not... I hate to see a one-hit wonder, as it were, at Augusta. So,
right.
But you're right about South African golfers, Anthony, and it's a good point about how successful they've been so far this season. And I noticed, actually, the other day that Brandon Grace is now in the world's top 10. And he's a guy who, seemingly, no one talks about him. He's very underrated, a consistent winner on the tour, contended in majors last year. And he's a guy that could very well pop up this year and actually win a major. And but again, for Schwartzel, it's a case of, for him, he's got to try and improve his form in the bigger events on the PGA Tour and in Europe to actually say that, you know what, he's actually a player who can actually play around the world, not just in South Africa.
Yeah, he's sort of a little bit of an enigma. I mean,
yeah.
Considering what had occurred at the Masters and the way he won, you know, that front nine lightning, you know, for a couple of holes there and then took charge of it the rest of his round, was just, you know, was pretty fantastic, and he's got a beautiful swing.
Yep.
You know, he's not, I guess you could say he's sort of another version of Louis Oosthuizen, who sort of has done the kind of the same thing, but he's been a little more consistent, but he's been at least plagued with injuries. Now, I'm not as connected on your side of the pond as I am here, and so maybe there was some stuff that I'm not aware of in the last couple of years, but it's a strange drop-off, to say the least.
Yeah, it is, and you're right there about bringing up Louis Oosthuizen, and obviously he has had injury problems. That's been kind of put a tangible reason down to why he hasn't had the success that he's carried on from the Open 5 years ago. But of course, he did it actually, of course, narrowly lost at Augusta and narrowly lost in the Open last year. So Louis has still been a consistent player in the big events, while Charles hasn't done that. But that finish at Augusta 5 years ago in 2011, that was incredible. You had all these different guys. Aaron Scott was up there, Luke Donald was up there, all in contention. And I think Charles was the first and indeed only player to ever birdie the last four holes to win at Augusta. So it was a great finish and one of the best Masters probably of the last 20 years.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Let's go, visit our, or come to my side of the water hazard and let's discuss the, we have to, it is our obligation to discuss the worst show on turf. Although it did have the quite the finish, and I was quite pleased to see Phil Mickelson up there and to see that he had, had somewhat of a, you know, a little bit of an improvement this week in terms of his game and his form, although it certainly was shaky in the final round. Well, one could argue that it was shaky in the third round, but his up and down rate was just off the chart. So, and that was sort of a little bit of smoke and mirrors, but it was a nice finish, and I am happy for Vaughn Taylor. I mean, I'm not sure what the lowest ranking person ever to win. I know, you know, but that was, I think he was in the, you know, mid 400s, prior to, you know, coming in. He was traveling with a travel bag. You know, the win to me speaks a number of things. One, that, you know, you never give up and you persevere and you follow that dream. And two, it's a win for how the other half lives. I mean, here's a guy who is, you know, traveling with a travel bag because he can't, he doesn't want to pay for extra baggage and going over to South America. People forget that, and he's a win for one of those guys. That for every G5 out there, there are 50 guys that are trying to make a meal.
Yeah, definitely. And I drew parallels on Sunday evening to Oliver Wilson's win at the Dunhill Links 2 years ago at St Andrews. Obviously, very similar events, pro-am format, and over three courses. And Oliver Wilson had fallen off the European Tour entirely, was struggling on the Challenge Tour, but got an invite to St Andrews, and he came through and he won. Beat Rory in the end, of course, to actually win the Dunhill and get his first European Tour win, when he was actually ranked, I think, even higher, below 1,000 in the world. He was even lower than Vaughn Taylor. So there was similarities there, and actually both Augusta State guys at college back in the day as well. So oddly parallels there. But yeah, fantastic for Vaughn Taylor. You know, it's hard to see these guys, obviously, a life-changing win, but it was. It's a real career rejuvenator. His career is going in one direction. Unfortunately, it was a negative one. And this is a guy who we all remember, you know, 10 years ago was actually part of the Ryder Cup team. You know, it was maybe the weakest U.S. Ryder Cup team of all time. You had guys like him and Brett Westerick and so on, who you don't really hear much about now at all. But those guys still played well if they got on that team. And Vaughan Taylor is still a very capable player, and he showed that he played great towards the end there and was lucky enough to actually finish further ahead than he actually did. But with Phil, as you say, I guess he's still back there playing well again. He had a relatively consistent start to the season. He's talking a good game again, and he's also delivering at times as well. But I think the final day there was perhaps a sign that Phil hasn't really been in contention very much for a while now. And I think that maybe showed. And we kind of, we see guys like Phil and Tiger down the years, and then Jordan Spieth more recently, how they make winning golf tournaments look so easy when indeed it's so hard. You know, guys who are so talented go for a career, often with only winning once or twice, if even at all. And when you're out of that bubble and you're out of that environment and that pressure, and Phil was back in that on Sunday, and it was a big statement for him if he actually had won that event. And maybe the nerves just got to him towards the end, but still, apart from that, it's really encouraging for him going forward, especially going to Augusta, where he seems to always play well. I expect him to go there in good form as well this year. But for Vaughan Taylor, of course, going back to Augusta, his hometown tournament, that's a massive thrill.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about Phil and the powerhouses over the years, you're right. They do make it seem easy.
Yeah.
But I also think his struggles speak to the fact that, and albeit this is there's a caveat that there wasn't many people chasing them in terms of star power and on the tour, but the fact that he was able to just keep himself together, glued together for as long as he did to birdie 16 and 17. I know he birdied, and so, or he made the par saving putt on 16,
yeah, that's right,
and then birdied 17, and then to just have a chance. Which just speaks to his talent levels, which we know is sort of obviously off the charts. But only through that was he able to keep his round going. I had cause for concern. Now, historically, you know, I've watched pregame shows when Phil is in contention, and I can probably say the only thing I can say for certain about Phil in watching him, whenever he has alignment sticks out in his pre-round, it's never really, it's been bad more times than it's been good. And so, and the fact that he flies in his coach, you know, I'm not sure, you know, who am I to say? I'd like to see him just go with what he had, but he flies in his coach. So you knew obviously he was very concerned, with what was going on. And so it was a lot of smoke and mirrors. I was happy to see him to be in contention. And then to your last point, talking a good game, I think you're right. I think to some degree he's always said those things. And
yeah,
I think he got stale with Butch, but he always kept on saying those things. I think he's back to believing those things. And I think that's the subtle, and I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's right. And the first podcast we did, we spoke about Phil, and we mentioned how when he gets in the right frame of mind and he has the right energy levels and he stays healthy, then you know, he's such a talent. He's not going to be a dominant player he was as such, but I think still, in certain weeks, he's still going to be a real threat, because you don't become a bad player overnight. And it's only 3 years now since he won the Open Championship, and of course he contended at the Masters last year and the PGA before that. So when you get to the big events, the big situations, Phil, when he gets inspired, he can still be a real contender. But you're right, a good point about the alignment sticks there. And actually, I think I saw you tweet that on Sunday before the final round as well, so it was a really good observation. And it's an interesting point, and I think you're right there. And a good point as well, actually, with Phil coming back there on 16, that great putt, and then 17 getting the birdie, that showed a real kind of steely nerve to him there. Maybe the 18th was one kind of hurdle too far, but he still got over enough hurdles to actually give himself some encouragement. And our positive as well, it was actually the 17th hole at Pebble Beach looks so much better now than it did before.
I'm sorry, say that again. I missed that last part.
The 17th hole at Pebble looks so much better now with the green being redone than it was before, because it wasn't a great hole before this year. It looks much better now.
Yeah, well, it looks, you know, it's back to being a proper golf hole. It just had become so outdated that you know, even you just can't. It just couldn't keep up the specifications as they were. No longer could match the modern game, and they had, you know, they probably had maxed that out for years, actually, not just recent years, but probably for quite some time.
Yeah.
And, you know, where the irons were not matching the green surface. And so it was just, you know, really, I hate to use this word because I get on them. But since we're talking about it, and since we're talking about the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, I will use the word iconic. It is such an iconic hole that, you know, you're always drawing back to memories of Tom Watson and whatnot. But it was a shame to watch it become the disgrace that it had become. Really, that's
absolutely.
What I'm trying to say.
And I must quickly ask you a question here, Anthony, and it's involving, we talked about it last week, but did you sit down and watch the Saturday CBS broadcast? Did you watch it?
I will, in total truth here, it was on in the background, but I had been working, I've been working on a couple of different projects, and so to say that it was on, yes. To say that I was paying any attention to it would be a lie, because it was just on in the background. I just sort of kept very, very loose tabs on it, just because I obviously Phil was in contention and whatnot, and I wanted to stay somewhat connected, other than, you know, just looking at a raw score. But I will say that I did not watch one Konica Biz Hub swing. another atrocious amateur swing. So I could not tell you who was on that. I can't tell you who was in the booth on 17. I know they usually bring in the celebrities for whatever reason to talk and to say, you know, what another wonderful year it's been.
Yeah.
You know, I could repeat that phrase, and I probably could tell you what they said from having seen it for so many years. So that's as far as I can tell you. I saw the Saturday broadcast.
Yeah, I think that's for the best, because it wasn't great. And Clint Eastwood was in the booth there on 17, looking completely disinterested, really unaware of where he was half the time, it looked like.
Yeah.
And mind you, he was sitting next to Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo, and that is pretty dispiriting.
Yes.
And there were these two guys that came in and played the guitar. I have no idea who they are. And it all got rather surreal and really quite depressing, because, you know, we watched this for the golf tour. We want to see the best players play. And Jimmy Walker, I think, shot 63 on Saturday at Pebble, and we never saw a single shot from him, and that's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all, you know, listen, that's, you're only stating the reasons why we don't watch the broadcast.
Yeah, and it's the same thing every single year. And actually, there was a quote from the producer at CBS there, who seemed to almost say that whatever we can do, the celebrities on television, particularly if they have CBS television shows, we will do that in favor of the professional golf. And that's... seems maddening. You're alienating your regular audience, and that's surely not a positive thing to do.
Nope, but they only care about the bottom dollar and the money, and the money that they, having those celebrities, does to raise charity, which is a good thing.
It's
a wonderful thing, and I'm, you know, happy for the charities that benefit from it, but you're not going to make me watch it, you know. And so,
yeah, indeed.
And so, you know, whatever you do what you have to do, and I'm going to do what I have to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the way I leave it. We're coming to the end of this short podcast this week, but wanted to just address one thing in this idea of the Brandel Chambly, who is probably doesn't have a PhD that I am aware of, but he certainly does have a PhD in stirring the pot, and just knows exactly how to do that. And so this time he's done it with Rory, and since there's really no more Tiger, Rory becomes the lightning rod this time around, and his workout habits. Of course, he has to connect it to Tiger, and only the way that Brandel Chambly can do. But his new target is Rory. And so just your thoughts on this fitness regimen and Brandel Chambly's comments.
Well, first I've got to say that I think Brandel Chambly is actually a very smart guy, and I think he brings a really interesting perspective. You don't always have to agree with what he says, but I think he brings a relatively well-informed and well-thought-out opinion about different things. And I've interviewed him before, and I think he's a very interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
And recently he said here that early in the week that he has concerns. He had a teleconference call he had before the LA Open, and he's concerned about Rory's fitness regime, how he's on the gym all the time, on the front cover of Men's Fitness magazine, and he's really bulking up muscular-wise and doing all kinds of weightlifting and so on. And Brandl brought up he has concerns about that going forward. Again, I used to say they're bringing in the kind of analogy of Tiger, who, of course, bulked up in kind of the middle of his career. And after that point, a lot of different injury problems. And, of course, his game really changed. He went from being kind of the really flexible young guy he was in 2000 to being the sort of bulky, muscular, Navy SEAL sort of guy, of course, in the late 2000s. And, of course, Rory responded to this. And the only way that Rory does, and Rory's got a great sense of humour and uses social media really well, and responded to Brandl by posting a video of himself lifting the big weights. And it was a good tweet from Rory, good fun. And Brandl actually was on the Golf Channel today, I think, and he was kind of expanding on what he was meaning by his concerns about Rory going forward. I think it's a good point, actually, and how we look at the players. And actually, it's all sports as well. It seemed to me that in all different kinds of sports, the players now are in the gym a lot more, they're bulking up, they're getting stronger. But at the same time, they're pushing themselves further, but they seem to be getting more injuries. And this is not just in golf, but in other sports as well. And again, how it affects the golf swing as well. And I think Brandl brought a good point where he actually, you look at Tiger back in the 96 Masters, he was driving the ball 340 yards on average, well ahead of the rest. But then 6-7 years later, when he started bulking up, he had lost a significant amount of his yardage because he wasn't as flexible as he was before. He was stronger, but he wasn't quite as flexible. And for me, the golf swing has always been, I say it from a complete layman's standpoint, just my kind of observation for what it's worth, would be that I think that flexibility and speed is obviously the most important thing in the golf swing in terms of creating power, generating power, but also longevity. Mm-hmm. And you look at guys like Sam Snead and Tom Watson, who have played great well into their 60s and so on, even beyond that, in Snead's case. And both of those guys were fit and in the gym and so on, but they focused more on yoga, flexibility, rather than building up muscle strength.
Yeah.
It seems to me that players are different now, but again, the game's changed because everyone's doing it now at varying degrees. And perhaps the guys now will not have the same long careers that players in the past had. Maybe 10, 15 years from now, these guys will not be playing like the guys did before because maybe injuries will be there. But I guess now the money is there as such where a long career isn't as paramount as perhaps it used to be, where guys now can go out there for 15 years, play great, earn $100 million, then go and retire. When guys before maybe had to play well into their 40s, into their 50s in the Champions Tour and so on. So it's an interesting kind of point, a discussion point about how strength, building up muscle strength, how that would maybe change someone's game, maybe potentially put more strain on their body and potentially inflict more injuries on themselves. So I don't know, Anthony, what you think about this, but I think Brandl has a point here.
I want to bring narrow into focus an important point that you made, and that is there's a difference between bulking up and being flexible.
Yeah.
And maintaining flexibility, and
sure.
That's an important distinction. And to my eyes, Rory does not look like Tiger did when he was at the peak of his bulk, if you will.
Yeah.
Tiger is a obsessive person. He has an obsessive personality. If I had to, you know, be an armchair psychologist, I mean, how else can you be that good and not be have an obsessive, you know, sort of personality? So, so he just took it to the level to which he did things,
mm-hmm.
And you know, Rory also had the benefit of hindsight. Of Tiger's hindsight, and
mm-hmm.
maybe I just don't, and it seems to be like he's taken that as a sort of cautionary tale, because
mm-hmm.
you might see, you know, for example, him tweeting out doing those squats and having those three big plates on each side as he's doing those squats, but
yeah.
you'd be hard pressed to tell me that his legs look like KJ Choi's. That look like, you know what I'm saying? Who was a professional builder, you know what I'm saying? So when I see him, when I see his actual physique change, and I mean, yes, he does look fitter. He does look like he's
mm-hmm.
more chiseled. But when I see him actually getting bigger, then I'll be more concerned. Now, to your point, to the other point in terms of this idea that there's been this sort of cultural change,
mm-hmm.
Part of that is keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, PGA Tour players are so, you know, mentally unstable to some degree because of what we do, you know, what the nature of golf does to us, that we're very, I feel like, susceptible to, well, if he's doing it, well, then I need to do it. And if he's, you know, making all this money, then I need to make all, you know, then this is what I need to do to make all this money. I mean, Davis Love, went as far as to say that. I think in a recent interview I saw not too long ago when he was, when I don't know, it was just a throwaway piece on him, but it was during a broadcast, and he said, I was down in, you know, in St. Louis, in off Georgia, where the island, I forget. Sea Island, thank you.
Yeah.
I was blanked out on another senior moment. you know, and he said, I was walking around Sea Island, and I go and I see these guys and in with those guys. And so I know I have to do that. And so here is a guy who's doesn't really have to work for the rest of his life, to, you know, to be honest with you. And he feels like he needs to do that, to do it. So there is that cultural sort of obsessiveness that they have with this fitness culture, I guess you could say. And the last thing I would add to it is that this is also a way of the fitness industry also has made, has certainly forced its way into the golfing industrial pie, and they wanted their slice, and they got their slice, and this is a way for them to capitalize on that. Everybody wants a slice of the golf industry in whatever shape or form, and you know, you could argue you know, the merits of it, or the whatevers of it, the particulars of it, the science of it, you could argue, but the bottom line is it's here. And they have, they're here to stay for a while, and they're gonna capitalize it. And I don't see them going away.
No, that's a great point, Anthony. And I think as well, whatever way you feel about this, I think ultimately we'll not know have a definitive answer about Rory in particular, or anyone else for that matter, for another 5-10 years. If we see these guys 5-10 years down the line, more of these guys, their bodies start breaking up when they get into the early 30s, like Tiger's did, and so on. If that starts to happen on a more regular basis, then perhaps then we might say, well, maybe the weightlifting and so on, that isn't the way to go for golf. But are you right there? The distinction between flexibility and strength is different. And I think Rory, so far, has been going in the right direction. In terms of that, he's not, he's obviously really fit and he's got a great physique and whatever else, but he's not a massive bodybuilder. He doesn't have that kind of over-the-top look that Tiger had for a while. So I think Rory, maybe a cautionary tale for him, but I think he's a smart guy and I think he'll do the right thing. But it's interesting though, Brandl brought this up, and I know people kind of criticise Brandl for being somewhat inflammatory at times, but I think he brings an interesting perspective. You know, for me, the worst thing that a golf analyst can do, and it happens far too often, is a guy who sits there and doesn't actually say anything. He talks a lot about really giving an opinion. You know, Brandl, he gives an opinion.
Yes.
And whether you agree with it or not, for me, most of the time, it's certainly thought-provoking.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the only time, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion and being articulate enough to express that opinion, being intelligent enough to support that opinion. He does all of that. I think, and I can't speak to this personally because I'm not a golf instructor, I think part of what gets him in trouble is that there is a an army of PGA professionals that get a little a little edgy when he starts breaking down golf swings and starts talking about stuff. Now, I can't say what he's saying is a load of you know what, but it certainly, I guess maybe it's a long way of saying maybe he's doing the same thing in that regard, but I agree with you to a point. I just feel like sometimes with Brandl, I don't think you need to poke, you know, be a lightning rod for the sake of being a lightning rod. That's all. I guess that's really, I mean, was this really, when it comes down to it, yes, articulate, yes, or intelligent, but was this really even all very necessary, to be honest with you, this discussion, you know, or this to be even, at least now? I mean, if Rory was out this week because he pulled his hamstring doing 400-pound squats, okay, now is the time. But Rory hasn't been out. He hurt himself playing soccer or football, whatever you want to call
it. That's right.
You know, let's, you know, when it's appropriate, then I think it's appropriate. You know, then he can posit his opinion in any shape or form, because clearly he's been able to do it in an articulate and intelligent way. But I don't like the timing of it. It just seems like forced, like almost like, I don't want anybody, I'm Brandl Chamblee, don't forget about me kind of thing. And I'm sure it's not the case, but I'm just saying it feels like that, you know?
Well, I should say that Brandl did state in his statement that actually it has not affected Rory to this point, and Rory's playing fine, looks great. So he didn't actually say that Rory had a problem. He just was more almost looking into the future and saying maybe it could be a problem.
Right.
But you're right about Brandel and the swing instructors and so on. Of course, Brandel's actually brought out a book recently about golf instruction, focusing on the great players of the past, looking at their swings and seeing how their games can actually be, we can actually learn from their example now, which in some ways goes against the kind of modern ethos of golf instruction. He talks about actually lifting the left heel and so on, which right. really don't talk about nowadays. But a lot of the great players throughout time have all done that, not least Jack Nicklaus. So Brando, you know, he's out there, he's always got an opinion about different things, but he expresses it really well. And it's a bit, you know, Johnny Miller is similar in a way, but Johnny Miller, I'm not as critical of Johnny Miller as many people are, but Johnny Miller is clearly not either as intelligent or as articulate as Brandel is.
Right.
And they both do very similar things, but I think Brandel does it in perhaps a more subtle and perhaps more intelligent manner.
Yeah, without question. And Johnny Miller is just basically, shock, almost like, but he's more shock value than he is. He had fallen in love with his own persona. And that is, I say choke, and I'm the only one willing to say choke, and then he threw it around like it was, like it was free money almost. So,
yeah.
So that's where he sort of, he definitely differs from Brandel, and you're right, definitely not as articulate and clearly not as intelligent. But he did shoot 63, so in a final round of a match. At least I heard that.
Never forget that.
I heard that. So, and since I've never done that, and certainly not ever sniffed 63, at least not for 18 holes anyway, I will say, who am I to say that about him? But that's just about the amount of time we have for this week's show. Kieran, always a pleasure. And I hope that, this episode won't yield as much criticism, at least in terms of for you specifically, as last week's.
Yeah, I feel much more calm and confident about this one I did last week. And obviously, I don't think I've been too controversial, have I, Anthony? So I think we're okay this week.
Yeah, and I only blame myself for that, actually. So.
Well, you are the host, aren't you? So it is your fault.
It is, yeah, yeah.
It's your responsibility. I'm your guest.
Right.
You failed to control me.
I did. I did. I find that I put the blame on myself. I need to, anytime I don't find you to be the force of criticism or the focus of criticism and embarrassment, then I haven't done my job, I don't think. All right, Kieran.
Absolutely.
That's Kieran Clark of golfshake.com. Kieran, thank you so much for this week, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Cheers, buddy.